Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast's The New Talk. This is going to be podcast 602, and what a week it has been with the one-hour press conference by President Trump, which really should have been a Dino De Laurentiis movie. It was just amazing, and you know, I could do a whole podcast about it, but I'm going to go ahead and let the radio show speak for itself this week, because oddly enough, it hits on all these themes. So let's just go ahead and run segment one of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show number 66. Here we go. Welcome to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. For more of the podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. Welcome. In this show, drinking some coffee, sitting here after dinner, and thinking a lot about the discourse this week, the way we talk about politics, the way politics is covered in the media. And if you've been listening to the podcast this week, you know that this is what I've been talking about and thinking about. And in general, it's about the disgust that I have, and honestly, contempt for the business of political coverage these days. Where you have a situation where people are creating tribes of followers and marketing those tribes in service of personalities and telling those people what they really want to hear as opposed to actually serving them. This is the idea that many of these people really don't know what's going on. I did a whole podcast about that. But they are going to tell you what is going on, and they're going to make you think that they know what they're talking about. A cacophony of discussion that leaves us less informed. And honestly, to me, it sounds like this.
The Obama
Kellyanne is spice. Maybe spared on the next episode of SNL.
Kellyanne Conway. Kellyanne, thanks for joining me. Congratulations. The President's Education Secretary, Betsy DeVos, was confirmed today. Vice President Pence had to be the first VP ever to cast a tie-breaking vote on a cabinet nominee. And now the reason that happened is because two Republicans senators opposed to the Education Secretary DeVos the first time any Republican senator has voted against any Trump nominee. Can you understand their stated concerns, these Republican senators, about what they perceive to be a lack of experience with the public school system?
I respect the concerns. I'm glad that they've made them transparent in public. I think that's part of healthy democracy. We run a very big Tent Party here in the Republican Party. Jake, there will be disagreements. Very pleased that Vice President Pence cast that tie-breaking vote and that Secretary also just sworn in just across the way here in the Vice President's ceremony, Vice President's ceremonial room at 5 p.m. today, and that she'll get on with the business of executing on the President's vision for education. He's made very clear all throughout the campaign and as President, he wants to repeal the Common Core. He doesn't think that federal standards are better than local and parental control, for example, and he respects the fact that although public education works for many children in this country, including mine, it doesn't work for everyone, and that children should not be restricted in terms
Well, as I mentioned, the first day that the Department of Justice made White House counsel available, sought to notify White House counsel was January 26th. President was immediately informed of the situation. As I said, based on the information that was provided at the time, his view was that this was not a violation. He was proved instinctively correct. And White House counsel at that time undertook an extensive review, both of materials and questioning. I'm not going to get into the specifics, but I will tell you that
now, I believe all of this cacophony, this yelling and screaming and so forth, is really corrosive. There is little substance. I don't blame the media for it. That's not what I'm saying. I just think this is the nature of things today. People think substance is developing and reporting on complex conspiracy theories like the Illuminati is controlling Trump. Those kinds of things are not substance. Substance is reporting on issues so people can understand them and be better informed about them. Better information and substance is not opinion. It is not commentary. For example, this week there was a news story on Fox that Britt Hume had been a guest on Tucker Carlson, and this was supposedly a news story about what Britt Hume thought. And there's nothing wrong with Britt Hume. I like Britt Hume, but that isn't substance. That's just repeating what somebody said who is out of the process to someone else who's got another show on the same network. So it's a promo. It's not substance. So the real question of whether it is a crime for the FBI to have recorded Michael Flynn's calls, for instance, isn't really being fully vetted and discussed, or calls from Trump campaign officials aren't taken up after a segment of commentary from a reporter to a personality about what they think, you end up not being any better informed about whether or not any laws were broken by the FBI, for example, or what actually happened, or whether Michael Flynn broke any laws, or whether Trump broke any laws. So because we don't know the law, and we don't know what the guidelines of the law are as far as the FBI is concerned, we rely on people that we think know. But when we are talking to people that don't know, then we're really not talking to anyone. So then you really can't evaluate for yourself whether Michael Flynn did anything wrong or whether it was legal for the FBI to record these calls. Now, there are hundreds of examples, better and worse, of this every single day. People have asked me, have you lost your will to fight? And I ask, what exactly am I supposed to be fighting for? And more importantly, why am I expected as a commentator to do your fighting for you? Why are people on the radio, in podcasting, or wherever expected to do someone else's work for them? Why am I expected to defend and fight for a party agenda? That's part of the problem with people on the right. They think that saying it is the same as doing it. They expect people in media to do their fighting for them or to tell them what to fight for as opposed to them actually doing it. And I've refused to do that lately. And I guess it's turning out to be somewhat controversial, but I'm going to talk about why a little bit in this show. What we're lacking here is civil society. And I'm going to talk about that too in this show. And yes, this has also been another tumultuous week with President Trump, the firing of National Security Advisor Flynn, and questions about who knew what and when. The chief source in this battle, and this may be something that you don't know, is the New York Times, which quotes unnamed sources as saying the Trump campaign had numerous conversations with Russian officials prior to the election, something that has been denied by the administration. And so now we're dealing with unnamed sources. But if those sources turn out to be credible and are eventually named, maybe there's an insurmountable problem there for Trump or not. We're going to see. Along the lines of civil society, though, I want to talk a little bit about rhetoric and actual governance and governing, because once we get past the confirmation votes and during the confirmation process, there's going to be a need for the new president to begin the process of initiating his own effort to pursue legislation that was supposedly important to his constituency, like repealing Obamacare, the economy and jobs, tackling immigration issues, and from his perspective, tackling a big stimulus and construction program and reducing government regulations. Now, you can do these things with executive orders, but even with executive orders, as Trump is beginning to learn, a president's ability to act in such a way is limited because the real power in the United States government is the legislature. Trump's going to have to get past the rhetoric and combat with the mainstream media to formulate and campaign for a legislative agenda that actually accomplishes something. That's really the challenge of the presidency. And to do that, he is going to have to build broad support in Congress. He's going to need broad support in the general public, and that's where he's going to need help, not in making the arguments. And we're almost running out of time, but I guess I would ask, with the economy basically treading water, what do you think needs to be done? You know, do we run the country like a business? Do we repeal Obamacare? Do we build roads and bridges? Do we cut taxes? Do we cut off foreign trade? Do we fight the globalists? What might work and what might not work? And how do you figure out what's going to work and what will not work? What did you vote for when you voted and why? And I guess, you know, there's a lot in here to talk about. And hopefully, if we have the time, we'll also talk about states across the Midwest and the nation, including New Hampshire, which are now talking about curtailing union bargaining rights in states. This is becoming a big, big issue. So coming up, lots of talk these days. When civil society breaks down, everything is political. You want to fight? How about fighting for civil society next? You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. For more of the podcasts, you go to thebobdavispodcasts.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Just ahead of segment two of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. It's also been a great week in yoga for me. I mentioned how I kind of hurt my back a week ago, and I kind of had to battle my way back, and it was easy with Hydrus, because if you exercise doing anything that requires physical effort, CrossFit, cycling, lifting, competitive sports, you know that sometimes you got to reach down to what they call the grind in wrestling and get it and be able to practice. And of course, I practice hot yoga and all kinds of other yoga, and you sweat a lot, and you can get dehydrated. And when you're dehydrated, you can get hurt. Obviously, that can happen anytime, but you can be sore. And the thing is, when I found Hydrus, it transformed my yoga practice. It makes a huge difference because I'm actually practicing yoga. This is the new high-performance beverage. It gets electrolytes into your muscles with unrivaled speed and effectiveness. It helps you take it to the edge, which is where it all is. That's where the grind is. That's where you grow. That's where you get better. Hydration is really, really important. Join the performance hydration revolution. Check out HydrusPerformance.com. H-Y-D-R-U-S, HydrusPerformance.com. Links to their Instagram page, Facebook. You can learn more about it and where to get it at HydrusPerformance.com. Okay, here's segment two of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast radio show. For more of the podcasts, you go to thebobdavispodcasts.com. Welcome back. Grab some more coffee here. So this week, I've been doing a lot of podcasting about the amount of political talk in this country. And it seems like the more we talk about politics, the less we know. And why do I say that in the context of politics? And I think the reason that I say it, I know the reason I say it, is that we're really not talking about policy from a substantive perspective. We're not having substantive conversations where information is exchanged. Most of it is just noise, people with their own constituents jacking up their own constituents, getting more followers by cutting across the grain. Most of it is rhetorical flourishes that get comments from other commentators, and then we end up fighting about who said what and how dumb this one is or how dumb that one is. Meanwhile, very few of us have any real experience in the areas that they're talking about, and we don't get information or facts that help us learn anything or even feel as though we have any experience in those areas. Now, normally, going to a source with an experienced and knowledgeable person and talking about something could yield something of substance, a new idea, new information, something that would help. But generally, that is not the case. Everywhere we turn, we are confronted with conspiracy theories, angry commentators, more rhetoric, more videos, more memes, and so forth. And just, it almost goes without saying that 30 years ago, this wasn't the case. There was no social media. Nobody talked politics like this 30 years ago. But today, political talk has become a cancer. In fact, just saying that political talk is a cancer is apparently controversial because people want you to fight for one side or another. And if you won't fight for one side or another, then there's something wrong with you. And, you know, what I am asking these days when people say, well, you know, have you lost your will to fight? I say, what am I fighting for? And who am I fighting for? And then I ask, why am I fighting? Why am I expected to fight for you? Because lending another loud voice to a fight from more big government Republicans, which is usually what ends up happening, or big government Democrats, isn't fighting. Lending another loud voice to support people who are also, basically talking out the top of their heads, isn't necessarily fighting for anything either. It's kind of like fraud. Endorsing and supporting a candidate is telling you who to vote for, which is why I refuse to do it during the election season. Why would you do what I would tell you to do? Why can't you do your own homework? Why can't you decide for yourself? Someone made a comment on my Facebook page the other day, which is very insightful. This is what is missing in our society, and that is civil society. Because my Facebook commenter said, when civil society breaks down, everything becomes political. And I thought that was very insightful. What is civil society? Well, aside from the definition, I think civil society is the material that holds the cell together. It holds the cells of our nation and our polity together. Civil society is defined as community. It's defined as citizens linked by common interests and collective activity. Civil society is distinct from government and business. I would define it as individuals working together to solve problems, build community, and be good citizens. People who are not in the government, they're in the community. People who, through experience, have learned to build consensus to get things done. And, of course, civil society can be politically active, but more importantly, it is the core of the citizens of a town, village, city, or county or country. And we used to have this in this country, but today civil society has been replaced with political action groups and angry protests and talk radio, and people, I think that that is civil society. It isn't. If you want to talk about fighting, the real warriors in this country are the people that show up day after day, week after week, year after year to put out the chairs and make the coffee at meetings. It's the people who will help their neighbors. It's the people who will help the community. It's people who attend village board meetings and Board of Education meetings year after year. It's people who respond to calls for community to help. It's people willing to work with other people they may not agree with to solve a problem everybody agrees is a problem. It's people who show genuine concern for others through their actions. These are people who are leaders. Is that you? Because if it is, then you are the real warrior, not the bloggers and podcasters and Bill O'Reilly's of the world. Certainly, there are times when political action is called for, and those are times when people of different points of view go to work to convince others that their idea is the best, and there are winners and losers in these transactions. Inevitably, sometimes there are bitter contests and bitter feelings about things, but it shouldn't break down civil society. What's missing today is people will not convene with people they don't agree with. Discussions descend into screaming and name-calling and repeating what is heard on television to get the other guy in the debate. Media, I hate to even use the word, but particularly talk radio, social media, some digital news sources, basically mimic and model and initiate even on purpose or inadvertently, this kind of really antisocial behavior. And the concept of civic and civil breaks down. Now, if you doubt this, look at the president. He campaigned on a largely rhetorical basis, and in case you're wondering what that means, he said stuff, and the media reacted, and people liked what he said, and he kept saying stuff. Now, he and those who support him are discovering saying stuff and getting stuff done are two different disciplines. The problem is, the candidate who cut his teeth saying stuff and getting people to react is finding actually running the executive branch apparently is a lot more difficult than he thought. It's hard to believe, but so-called conservatives think the U.S. presidency is a monarchy, apparently, as President Donald Trump should be able to snap his fingers and get what he wants, right? And you call yourself a liberty advocate. The lesson here is, if you want your solutions to have precedence, well, you have to work for them. And you have to do that by being a good citizen, by being trusted by other citizens, and being a leader and building consensus for your point of view. That doesn't mean Facebook. It means face-to-face. You don't win in the rally. You don't win because you said the cheeky thing at the debate. You win because you can work behind the scenes to build support for a concept, idea, or solution to a problem. And I'm not talking about politics. I'm talking about in your community. Now, this is something very familiar to the left, but not so much on the right. People on the right complain about the protesters, but they don't understand that what the left is doing with that is they are actually using protests to organize. And very quickly along those lines, here's some things that ought to run a chill down your back if you consider yourself a quote-unquote warrior. Groups like Our Revolution and the Resistance have already identified good candidates and are running them for lower offices across the country. Veterans, other people who are leaders in their community worried about the alt-right and Donald Trump. The election was less than 3 full months ago, and already the groups that lost have generated candidates and are running candidates for open seats that support their ideas. So defending the president, if that is what you want, is going to require building consensus and support for his ideas and programs, maintaining a Republican majority. If you want to fight, this is where the effort has to go. Coming up, is there a discernible political agenda on the right? Does the Republican Party and the Republican president support that agenda? Are you sure? Next. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Just ahead of segment 3 of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show, went out last week and did something really fun. There's something new and fun to do these days, whether it is a date night, business client appreciation event, a corporate team building event, something with your family, or a friend's night out. It's at Brush Studio West End in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Now, I can tell you that an artist will guide you through making and creating a painting. And I can tell you that you'll come away with a real painting, something you can hang on your walls at home or at work, something you and your friends and your coworkers or your family would be really proud of. But the other night, I actually went over to Brush Studio, and it's actually better if I take you inside a Brush Studio event a little bit, and you can kind of hear the reaction and what people do. So let's go on into Brush Studio.
Do you mind if I ask you some questions?
Sure.
You guys having fun?
Yes.
Yeah, tons of fun.
What are you painting?
We're painting birch trees and in the nighttime with a little cardinal.
Gun and birch.
Ready to die?
So they give you paint, right?
Yeah, and you just follow the people at the front.
The person at the front.
Yeah, the person at the front. And then you just follow their breaks and everything. And yeah, I don't know.
It's really fun.
Different thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, on a Friday night.
And a fun thing to do.
Yeah,
we're having a good time. We got the whole family here.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
So
I got my wife and our two sons and their fiance and one's girlfriend.
I didn't even know I could.
This is probably the most fun you can have at a job. Seriously. My favorite part is when people just completely go off the rails and do something that I would never think of or other people wouldn't think of, but they came here with like an intention. It's a thing to do on a Friday night that isn't watching TV, isn't going to a movie. You're being social with a group. You get a little wine or something, but it's not like that's all you're, at a bar, that's all you're there to do, you know. I've been teaching for 22 years, I make all kinds of stuff on my own.
You look like an artist. You
what?
Fun?
Oh,
you
absolutely.
You look like an artist.
I just found my inner artist.
Your inner artist.
Yeah.
Brush Studio in the West End St. Louis Park. 22 brands of beer, an extensive wine collection, catering from Crave in the West End. You're going to have a good time because they are event planning ninjas at Brush. Date night, client appreciation, corporate team building, family, friends. They'll all be great. Sign up online at Brush Studio in the West End St. Louis Park at brushstudio.net. Brushstudio.net, or you can reach out to Brush at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. Brush Studio. Be sure to sign up online at brushstudio.net because classes tend to fill up fast. It's really fun to do. Okay, here's segment three of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. To sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter, The Bob Line, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. Welcome back. So we talked about the breakdown of civil society, and I guess that's an overstatement, but the breaking down of civil society and the rise of everything political in its place. So it's the argument, it's the protest, it's the anger, not necessarily community problem solving, anger and protesting and argument. The American Psychological Association has been monitoring the anxiety of Americans for 10 years, and stress is caused in this country by three primary factors: money, work, and the economy. Stress levels were actually decreasing overall until the election. Back in August, more Americans were worried about the outcome of the election. And then they took another recent poll last month, and it shows statistically significant increases in stress. It's actually worse than last August. And those were pretty bad, those numbers. And it wasn't just Democrats and the left, it's Republicans too. The movement of fast-paced events and the political climate are stressors for everyone. So actually, this data suggests that continuing the argument and the fighting and the rhetorical screaming and yelling might not actually be helping. In fact, we could be seeing the end of the efficacy of using rhetorical arguments to fuel a movement, just because I think people's stress levels can't be sustained at these levels, and they will eventually seek relief in something else or another way. We need to change the way we discourse. We need to change the way we talk. We need to change the way we think, and we need to change the way we argue these issues. So what's to do? Well, you know, when I was thinking about that, I started to think about just looking at it from the agenda perspective. There's a new administration. There's a majority in the House and the Senate for the Republican Party. And of course, the president is a Republican. And aside from whether or not the Republicans actually have an agenda right now, now comes the question of what it takes to get an agenda passed and made into law. And this is important. It isn't just support necessary in Washington. It's visible support from voters in key constituencies and in key congressional districts across the country, especially in districts where future and incumbent Republican candidates can be challenged significantly and perhaps lose those seats in 2 years, or really less than 2 years now. There's always those districts in the so-called blue states and red states that can be flipped, but there are many red state seats that are pretty close. So when people talk about fighting for a point of view, really what it means is getting out and civically organizing for a point of view or an agenda. And this is not rhetorical. This is the hard work of, organization. What are Republicans for? What is their agenda? Well, aren't they for repealing Obamacare, right? Well, now they're talking about repairing Obamacare. Remember, the president insisted it needed to be repealed and replaced, but now we're talking about repairing it. What about one of the chief stressors of the economy? What is the policy of the Republicans on the economy? What do you think the chief problem with the economy is? Have you had any conversations about it, substantive conversations with people you might not agree with, civil conversations to assess their perspective and their ideas about potential challenges to your point of view? What about tax rates, corporate tax rates, ideas for changing tax policy overall? What about the idea that suddenly Republicans are going around Washington floating the idea of a carbon tax credit? Now, if you were one of the people that bled red in the last election, did you think at the time at all, that Republicans would say, we're going to repair, not repeal, or that Republicans would introduce a carbon tax, which is, of course, one of the most unpopular ideas from the left over the past few years. Even the Pentagon is in this. The Pentagon this week is talking about sending U.S. troops to Syria. When You Bled Red was sending U.S. troops to Syria, one of the things that you thought would be a good idea. This is why I found it difficult to support and to tell you that you needed to vote for any candidate for president in particular, because we don't know what they're going to do when they get in. And it's not predictable what they will do when they get in based on what they say in a campaign. And it's one of the chief reasons I refuse to tell people who thought, you know, that I should tell them who to vote for. And it's one of the chief reasons I criticize people who were commentators who had to jump on a bandwagon. So that, among other things, was one of the main reasons that I stepped back from this fight, because I watched it in the primaries. I watched people give the same speech over and over and over again, and who knows what they actually thought or what they actually want to do. We have a big problem in this country when it comes to politics. People think they are voting for one thing, but they are getting something completely different. And we're not talking about just an adjustment in terms of what is possible, but the very thing people thought they were voting against, they're actually getting. And I think this is confusing everyone. Expecting commentators to be partisans, expecting partisan loyalty, only perpetuates the reality that both major political parties are intent upon enlarging the government and maintaining their power, because the people doing the shouting don't have any power and they really don't know what is going on. That's my point about nobody knows nothing. Now, people can be angry all they want. They can fight as hard as they want, but they won't get anywhere as long as the things they want are at odds with what is possible in Washington. And as long as they allow others to control the towns, the villages, the cities, the boards of education and planning, state houses and party mechanisms, they're not going to get anywhere. Now, sounding really angry on a talk show does absolutely nothing. And in my experience, actually, because I have sounded very angry on a talk show, the fact is you don't change anybody's mind anyway. The Tea Party people were angry, but they are not experienced enough in civil society. In my neck of the woods, it took them over 5 years, maybe more, to find viable candidates, one viable candidate who could actually win an office in the state house. Contrast that with the left, which earlier I mentioned, has identified viable candidates and has them up and running with support within 2 months after an election they lost. That's not something that happens because the media is on your side. It happens because the people that support that point of view are willing to work as part of civil society and within an organization with others to do what has to be done to win. Now, the president is great at getting his message out, but he's going to suffer 1,000 cuts if he doesn't have real support. And I'm not talking about rhetorical support from the people and from Congress. The problem here is, what is the agenda? $1 trillion infrastructure stimulus? Didn't we try that with Obama and the Democrats? And how is that a Republican idea suddenly? A repair of the ACA as opposed to a full repeal, which is what I think people voted for. Did you want a repair when you voted? My impression is that Trump and many Republicans thought it wasn't repairable. So I'm not sure what is happening. And again, rhetorical arguments aren't going to force them back to actually repealing it. Reducing taxes sounds great. Great. But if you don't cut spending when you cut taxes, it doesn't work. Ron Paul said that last week, and he is right. Lots of new cabinet secretaries are being confirmed. How many of them are actually talking about cutting funding and closing down some of these departments like education and energy? Suddenly, what we're hearing is that we're going to make the government work better, which is, in fact, exactly what President Obama said when he took office. The main thing people seemed to be worked up over during the campaigns was immigration. Well, you don't hear Congress talking about addressing immigration law and giving the president a law that can be vigorously and equally enforced. No, they've left that to Trump to use executive power to handle. But isn't executive power something so-called conservatives have been concerned about? A lot of people on the right talk about overreach of executive power with President Obama, but then suddenly you don't hear them complaining about it with Donald Trump. So if you consider yourself a warrior and you want to fight for the right, and these policies are what the right is for, then go ahead and be my guest and fight. Just don't expect someone else to do your fighting for you, and don't expect people not to laugh when you tell them you're a conservative. Now, I don't think this is controversial, but coming up, some final thoughts and some perspective on all of this. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Yeah, and, you know, oddly enough, we haven't been talking very much about the economy, and we haven't been talking very much about trade protection. But in the news these days, you hear all this talk about how companies are bringing production back to the United States. If your company is considering American manufacturing, please consider and remember DepoStar, American design and manufacturing and engineering. Visit their website at depostar.com. That's DepoStar. DepoStar.com. Now, just ahead of segment four of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show, don't forget there's something new and fun to do in St. Louis Park in the West End. It's Brush Studio. Date night, business and corporate events, family or friends night out at Brush Studio, West End, St. Louis Park. You're going to have a good time. Reserve a space now because classes tend to fill up. Sign up online at brushstudio.net or reach out to Brush Studio at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. Brush Studio. And don't forget the high performance beverage that gets you hydrated really fast and doesn't use sugar to do it, which is a revolution in the sports drink world. Don't forget Hydrus, H-Y-D-R-U-S. Join the performance hydration revolution, HydrusPerformance.com. That's H-Y-D-R-U-S, HydrusPerformance.com. Okay, here's segment four of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. You're hearing the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Remember, for all the Bob Davis Podcasts, you visit the BobDavisPodcasts.com. Welcome back. So this is the last segment of the show, and maybe these are some disjointed thoughts to kind of summarize. At least that's my intent, but we'll see what happens. So people seem to have a lot invested in winning the argument over the back fence. This is nothing new. It's been going on for a long time. People are always looking for a silver bullet argument that will just shut the brother-in-law up. These days, it is apparently controversial to suggest that heavy doses of political arguing is counterproductive. Certainly, Trump supporters feel betrayed by a media that seems to be going after the president on a day-to-day basis. But guess what? The president is a big boy, and he can defend himself. And he knew that he was picking a fight with an opponent that, figuratively speaking, buys his ink by the barrel. So what goes on day-to-day may bother people, but I think Trump is prepared for it either way. Here's an example of some of this from a tweet that I received in response to a recent podcast that I did called Nobody Knows Anything, which was about the intellectual and the experiential bankruptcy of almost everyone doing media these days. The tweet asked, how do I argue with people who think borders are racist and the Russians hacked the election? How do I respond to daily stories that make Trump look bad? And so I respond to that question. First of all, I did respond with an answer, which I'll give you in a second. But I respond with this question. What are you for? What do you believe in? What do you want to see happen? What do your friends and your family know you as? What do you want in your community and in your state? What are you all about? And what does your community need? And how much do you know about things? And what do you need to know?
The answer I tweeted to this guy was, you don't argue with people on the left. You don't argue with people that don't like you. People on the right simply cannot understand that. They think that everything is an argument, and if you win the argument, you win the battle. Not true. You simply are not going to convince people that hate Republicans or conservatives or whatever you want to call the people in power in Washington right now that they're right any more than they're going to be able to convince you. The people that hate Trump are going to hate Trump, and there's nothing that you, he, or anybody else can do about it. The haters are going to do everything in their considerable power to take him down, and they're not going to stop until they've either been beaten or they succeed. So the answer isn't secession, it isn't civil war, and if you're a right-wing person and you go around touting that, you are going to be sadly disappointed. And there's 100 reasons why, not the least of which 50-year-old men with fat bellies and store-bought AR-15s aren't going to last very long tromping around the forest, and you will lose both of those fights for many, many reasons. The answer to the question, how do I argue with fill in the blank with this week's outrage, is forget it. Figure out what you want and then go about making it happen. Organize to win, get votes and money, win elections. And when you win, they have to shut up because they have to. They're out of power. And when you keep winning, eventually you beat them. People in office and their advisors are the people getting paid to worry about how to argue with the left, not individual supporters. Citizens who hail from the right need to be thinking about what they can do to organize voters, not knock on doors, hand out literature, and work for candidates. And the thing is, this still isn't happening. You go to these local meetings, there's nobody there. And or six or seven people, or it's the same people that are there every week. People, when you get more involved every week and talk to different kinds of people in your own neighborhood and around the area, your arguments will become leavened with experience, and they will come if they are needed. But nothing is going to happen if you sit in the Barca lounger and watch television or sit and watch your phone and argue with your phone. Everybody thinks fighting in politics is about having arguments, and that's not what politics is. Fighting in politics is building organizations that can support initiatives developed by people of like minds through consensus. That's the way it works. For example, states all over the country are taking up legislation to limit the ability of labor unions to organize or to eliminate them entirely from representing state workers. It's very controversial. Now, a new study shows Wisconsin has already saved $5 billion as the result of Act 10 legislation there. Cities and towns across Wisconsin laud this landmark legislation because they have control of their budgets for the first time. Unions are struggling to make arguments because they no longer have a lock on dues and support from state workers. So it's a good thing if you're on the right to work, and the idea of getting the labor unions out of the public sphere is a good cause. And breaking the hold of unions representing state and local government workers is a good cause. How many of you people that are tweeting and angry and demanding that people, you know, fall into line are helping this effort in Missouri, in Iowa, or New Hampshire? Now, there will most certainly be protests and arguments there, but what if you could say, I don't waste my time arguing. Myself and several of my friends went down to Iowa last weekend and knocked on doors to help legislators build support for this bill. And what if you and your friends could say you were the deciding factor in those bills passing in some of those states? And what if you could apply the lessons that you learned in your home state? Well, that's how politics works. That is what fighting for a cause actually is. Finally, I want to say something else about the times we live in and the volume of the media and the political talk, and specifically partisanship. There is so much partisanship. You're expected to fight for a point of view, you know, and expected to be on a team. And whether you agree with it or not, or feel affinity for it, is not. And this is the rhetoric, not the work. People aren't going out and working, that you're expected to agree. Now, I have fought those fights that way. I've been an extreme partisan. I've learned something from it. I am an extreme person. But one of the things I've learned is sometimes you don't want to look at something because you don't agree with it. And your immediate reaction is to pillory somebody who says something you don't agree with, or automatically reject a way that someone talks or an idea because you don't agree with them, or because they come from a different part of the political spectrum, whether it's something you've read or heard and something that contradicts the position of your side. And there's a problem with that. And the problem is sometimes the other side is right. There's a lot of very bad bad stuff going on in the pursuit of partisanship right now, but really, it is the pursuit of power. Now, I'm talking about Washington specifically. There's things being said, different stories and different takes on those stories. There are a set of facts which it takes a lot of work to actually suss out and define. You see articles being written and conclusions being drawn from unconfirmed or unidentified sources, and this doesn't even address the stuff that is clearly written as editorials and placed as and sold as news stories. Just this week, one of those stories clipped Steve Bannon, who is the co-chief of staff for Donald Trump, the White House, and a guy who also happened to have run Breitbart. And it was Breitbart that ran a story that said co-chief of staff Priebus was going to resign. Bannon said he was livid over this unsubstantiated story his own news service ran. So it's everywhere. You and I don't know whether the Russians actually influenced the U.S. election. You and I don't know whether Trump or Trump's people talked to the Russians prior to the election or the inauguration. We don't even know if that's illegal. We depend on reporting and facts emerging to think about things and to make a decision. But more importantly, we have to wait for the results of these tussles and legislative initiatives to really understand what happened. For us to be standing here trying to make arguments about things we know nothing about, things that people in Washington don't know anything about, is a waste of time. We watch it, and we certainly make some sense out of it. We might glean an argument, but we really don't know. And the thing I've learned about partisanship, rejection of a specific allegation, is, well, I'll just give you three or four. What if the Benghazi thing wasn't a video? Right? What if the email server really was illegal? What if the break-in at Watergate actually was ordered by the White House and so forth? It's better to work in your community for the things you want, the things that are important to you, than it is to be the guy out there who is always arguing about things he doesn't know anything about. And yes, you can still send out tweets and memes and make comments on Facebook. I'm simply saying sometimes it's better not to invest yourself too much in a personality or an outcome or a party, because the problem with politics and politicians is they do things you didn't think they would do and are surprised when they do. They change their spots and their ideas when it suits them, and the only thing that stops them from turning on the voters is the possibility of political pressure. So if you want them to do what you want, you have to have the political weight to keep them on the defensive. That is real political power. And either you have it or you don't. And if you don't, there's only one thing to do, and that is to work to get it if you're interested in politics. Because political power is the only thing that makes our system work. Now, some people don't like that message. They would much rather hear fairy tales or conspiracy theories, but if you truly want to change things, you have to have political power. And politicians have to know that you will use it against them if they don't do your bidding. That's just the facts of life. That's going to do it for this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Live back in the studio, getting ready for the weekend. This has been, thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast through this whole period, the election, the transition period, and I'm sure what is going to be a tumultuous period in American politics going forward. And I'm trying to advance the story and trying to talk about things a little differently than I have in the past and a little differently than almost everyone is these days, because everyone's reacting rather than thinking about what's really, really important. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts on iTunes, right off the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Thanks for listening to the stream, more and more people finding the stream at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Thanks for listening on Stitcher.com or TuneIn, blogtalkradio.com. Thanks for liking, sharing, favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter. And I really appreciate the donations for mobile podcast command at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 602. Bye-bye.